When I have even the slightest of headaches or feel even just that little bit tired, I struggle to get my work done. So I really feel for people like Zoe Simmons, who is growing a memorable career as a freelance journalist, copywriter, and disability advocate while dealing with chronic pain on a daily basis. However, Zoe doesn't ask for sympathy. Actually, as I admitted during our interview, I feel massive imposter syndrome when reading out her bio. Because she has achieved such amazing things at such a young age, despite her ailments. And now she's on a mission to educate the world about society's gaps when it comes to managing a disability on a daily basis. I absolutely loved our chat in today's episode, and I'm sure you will too. Let's wheel ourselves in. Welcome to the Marketing Me podcast. If you're eager to grow your health and wellness business via effective marketing methods while maintaining your own health and wellness, this podcast is for you. The show features a beautiful blend of guest and solo episodes covering marketing and business growth topics, as well as ways to improve your physical, mental, and emotional self. I'm your host, Leanne Shelton, and I run a health and wellness copywriting agency while also offering content marketing training. So whether you're keen to outsource or DIY, my team at Right Time Marketing is here for you. Either way, we'll ensure your message is seen and heard by your ideal client. If you're keen to connect, feel free to book in a free 15-minute chat after listening to today's episode. The details are in the show notes. And today I'm joined by my guest, Zoe Simmons. Welcome, Zoe.
Thanks so much for having me.
So excited. We've been talking about this for a while. So I'll read out your bio. But just before I do, yeah, Zoe and I have known each other virtually for like, I don't know, 2-3 years.
Yeah, something like that. A long time. Like that.
And we actually haven't met each other face to face, which feels really weird because I feel like we sent each other messages. We've known each other from the copywriting group. And yeah, so anyway, I'm hoping if I can get myself to CopyCon this year, we'll actually meet face to face. So that would be amazing. But yeah, so I read the bio. So Zoe is a writer with a passion for making a difference. As an experienced journalist who's been published hundreds of times across the globe, including news.com.au, Daily Mail, Kidspot, Pop Sugar, Mamma Mia, City Morning Herald, New York Post, That's Life, and New York magazines. May have heard of some of those. Zoe knows how to captivate audiences through the raw power of storytelling. Alongside her journalism, Zoe runs her own copywriting and editing business, where she helps businesses small and large find their perfect words. And as an author, Zoe has words on ethical journalism published in Kathy Devine's 2019 Amazon bestselling book, Golden Age Politics, and has two poems coming out in Tea with My Monster, which is a 2022 mental health anthology by Beyond the Veil Press. She also has a chapter on how journalism helped her community in the Black Summer bushfires coming out in Occupational Therapy Australia's 2022 book, Doing Our Best, Individual and Community Responses to Challenging Times. Zoe is the silver winner of the Young Female Entrepreneur of the Year Award in the 2021 Stevie Awards for Women in Business. And these days, to top it all off, Zoe regularly speaks to the media about disability, chronic pain, and her community's experiences in the 2019-2020 Black Summer bushfires. She's also writing her own book on the topic, which she's about to pitch to publishers. So, oh my gosh, I have a bit of imposter syndrome talking to you and reading that out, Zoe. It's like, oh my gosh, I've been published in maybe two of those ever.
I have imposter syndrome hearing it. So,
So tell us more about like your experiences with the 2019-2020 bushfires. Like, obviously, writing your own book about it right now and you contribute a chapter. You want to share a little bit about your involvement with all that?
Sure. I grew up on the New South Wales South Coast in Batemans Bay and around Batemans Bay. And I'd moved away for jobs and uni and so on. But I was living in Melbourne at the time. I really missed home. I needed to see my mum. She raised me on her own. So it was just really important that I went back to see her. A lot was happening in my life and I just wanted to be home. Unfortunately, it was the same time that the Blexmoor bushfires were just about to ravage my home. So that was terrifying, waking up on New Year's Eve morning and seeing the sky red and seeing, the birds flying away. And, I vividly remember a leaf fell from the sky and it was black and it was still warm. And it was just so scary. And you didn't have reception, electricity cut as well. So there was no way to figure out what was happening, where the fire was, where we were. Thankfully, there was some reception at the evacuation center. But, even driving there, you were driving through bush that's burning. I just remember all this black smoke and seeing all these houses just, wondering whose house was on fire, did I know the person, were the people I loved dead? And at one point, my mum and I, she said she was going to follow me and she, I didn't know where she was for about an hour and my brain was just like, oh God, she must be caught in the fires and dead. And well, that might seem like an extreme thought for some people, that was the reality that day. So it was quite terrifying. And the firefight, I think, was less than a kilometre from the evacuation centre with black smoke and there were spot fires popping up all around us. I just felt so helpless. Like, I'm not a firefighter. I can't do anything. There was no information. So as a journalist, I kind of decided to just do what I could to help educate the community on what was happening, like what I was seeing, what I was hearing from the firefighters at the evacuation centre, information that wasn't accessible elsewhere. And I was posting it on all my platforms, and a lot of people that had loved ones in the area that couldn't get in touch with them were in touch with me. And I was saying, well, if they're here, they're safe. That's what I see, because no news outlets could get in because the roads were on fire. It was basically just whoever was in there already. And I don't remember seeing any other journalists around in Batemans Bay, to be honest, aside from maybe other freelancers or other people, but no like news crews or anything. So it was just a wild time. And afterwards, I just, all these stories I heard of my community, and like the big media would come in and just take our stories and sensationalize them and then forget. And that just frustrated me so much. They just didn't capture the heart of it. And I was writing all these articles. Actually even wrote one in the bushfires. I had like 20 minutes charged onto my laptop. So I wrote the article by hand, quickly typed it up at lightning speed, and then drove somewhere that had reception to hotspot my phone and email my editor. That was stressful. Oh my gosh. But I just, I needed to tell our stories, and I just didn't think 1,000 words did it justice. So eventually I was like, I need to write a book about this. Our stories can't just be for nothing. I won't let people forget, and it's our history and it matters. And, I just kept thinking it couldn't be for nothing. And there was all these stories of just absolutely mind-blowing things, like a man that survived fireballs the size of fire trucks blasting all around him. He was on his own. He hid in a cool room, and later, once they'd stopped as much, he like heard everything, like all his sheds exploding. He was convinced he was going to die, seeing like the fire flickering under the door, and calling his daughters and saying, I'm so sorry, I can't get out. And then reception cut. So, his daughters are thinking, oh my God, my dad's dead. Gosh, like, yeah. I've interviewed them as well, and just showing all these things. And I need to tell our stories. And it was also a way for me to, I guess, channel my own trauma. I'm now putting more of myself into the story because I guess people have a tendency to diminish their own stories. But I've been told that my part of the story is probably what's going to make it. Which is nerve-wracking, but I still think important, as well as like, the fact that I'm not a super experienced like broadcast journalist. I've never covered anything live before. I'm a print journalist, like a type. I don't cover natural disasters. It was just so wild. And, the fact that I'm disabled as well, that's probably not a perspective most journalists in natural disasters have. Yeah, I just felt compelled to tell our stories, and I'm really hoping that a publisher still cares.
Yeah, oh my gosh. And I heard about what you were going through at the time, and I was checking in with you and all that. It's just That was like the house was like okay, or it was destroyed. Yeah.
Ours was okay, thankfully. But lots of our neighbours nearby weren't in, like, the club we were supposed to go to New Year's Eve that night. That burnt down. So that was heartbreaking, just seeing everything destroyed. Like, one of my school buildings burnt down. I had so many friends that lost their houses. I actually knew one of the people that lost their lives and went to school with them.
Yeah.
You just didn't think it would happen to you, and it does.
Yeah, my gosh. And so you touched upon the fact that you had the disability as well. You want to talk a little bit about the health side of things? I know you've had a massive medical journey and it's still kind of ongoing. You want to talk a little bit about that and how that, I mean, how it fit in with the fires and also how that impacts you today?
Well, so for the past 5 years or so, I've been experiencing chronic pain and fatigue. honestly, I've been experiencing it for a lot longer, but I didn't realize it wasn't normal. I was just told that, you know, period pain is normal, but it's not. But I didn't realize that it was so painful. I thought I was just being a baby when I was younger. But I still remember in high school being so painful that I, you know, couldn't run in PE and I'd be forced to run and then be told that, you know, you're just trying to get out of PE or you're just, you know, being dramatic. And it wasn't until I think I was 21 or 22 that I broke my wrist and I realized my abdominal cramps hurt more than a broken bone. And that's when I was like, ha, that is not normal.
Wow. nope.
And then like all these other symptoms began to emerge and like I would be in pain all the time regardless of my period. And now it's every single day, unfortunately. You know, things like chronic fatigue come in, brain fog, nausea, headaches, insomnia, numbness and tingling that makes my hands and feet go numb pretty often, which is annoying, especially when you're trying to walk and then you can't. But it's slowly getting worse, I think, which is not fun, but I guess just a reality. Unfortunately, trying to get help in the medical industry is very difficult when you have an invisible illness. And I think when you are a female, to be honest, our pain is so often dismissed. Oh, they're told, you know, it's in your head. And I've heard so many stories of people saying this, and my story isn't an exception to that. So basically 5 years I've been battling, trying to get answers, you know, insisting that no, abdominal pain is not supposed to be that painful. Sorry. you know, it's not normal to feel that way. And just because you're not finding it on your skin doesn't mean it's something's not there. Like lots of these things aren't found and there's not enough research into them to know other ways of diagnosing. I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia last year, but it doesn't explain the severe abdominal pain. So there's something else going on. What it is, who knows? Possibly.
Your medical mystery. So like, because I know you've been through surgeries and things and I just keep picking up nothing. I mean, how does that make you feel? Like, obviously it's something.
Yeah, it has to be something. And also because I remember what it was like to not be in pain. Actually, I don't really think I do remember what it's like to not be in pain, but I know I used to not be in pain. Like I know that wasn't a daily thing. I know that I could walk without pain. You know, I could run without pain, which is things I just can't do anymore. It's maddening. Like after my last surgery where I got no answers again, I'm like, oh, they didn't find anything. That's good news. And it was devastating for me. That's actually the poem. I wrote a poem on that, and it won the 2022 Pocketry Prize for Unpublished Poets, highly commended. So I channeled that into a bit of creativity, but it's hard. And so many people are told that they don't have the answers. And, you know, often it's doctors refusing certain tests. Like I've been trying to get an MRI for a while, haven't been successful. It's like, oh, we haven't found anything else in your other tests. I'm like, isn't that the point of further testing?
But like someone has cancer and things like that, they do as many tests they can to work out if it's anywhere else. So that's really interesting. That
Yeah, it happens to a lot of people that have similar issues. You know, doctors just think you're making it up and you're not. I mean, a lot of my doctors do believe me, which is really good, but it's also frustrating when, you know, the gatekeepers won't let you get a certain test that could show something else or, you know, a new treatment or even just like comparing the public to the private system, like the private system can do tests that the public system doesn't even mention. They just say, oh, there's nothing we can do and send you off. Yeah. It's just, it's not okay.
No. So how do you manage like pain? Do you have to take a lot of medications? Do you take herbal remedies? What do you do?
I'm kind of trying to think everything. I'm on a couple of medications at the moment. So I do take pain relief most days. I kind of have to, or else I can't really exist. Especially if I need to go to the shops or something or clear my house. I cannot do that without pain relief. That would be agony, and pushing through just makes it worse. So it's a lot of pacing. I'm also on other medications that are supposed to control my hormones and reduce the pain. It is a little bit, but not fantastic. I kind of like the reproductive system out, but of course convincing medical professionals to do that to someone that doesn't have kids is not going to happen, so that's fun. But I've tried, you know, herbal teas, I've tried all the creams, all the sprays, all the bath salts, you know, so many different vitamins and, you know, exercises and stretching and yeah, honestly, it doesn't really do much to the pain. The only thing that helps is pain relief.
Yeah. So it's all abdominal, is that right?
I wish it was just abdominal. Unfortunately, well, abdominal pain is most of it. It's like someone is stabbing me and like pouring acid repeatedly. Like I sometimes describe it as someone like shooting me in the stomach and like white hot shrapnel spreading. It gets so bad that like I can't move or walk. But unfortunately, with the fibromyalgia, it's all body pain. So it's like all body muscular pain. I also have bone pain, nerve pain. It sometimes feels like shooting. Sometimes it's burning. Sometimes it's freezing. And, yeah, it's just not great.
So how do you type? Like, are your hands usually, fingers usually okay, arms okay to type?
They do hurt. Yeah. Sometimes it hurts too much to type. And those days I just rest. Because there's nothing really else I can do.
Yeah, yeah. Because I want to hear more about how you've managed your business around like this chronic pain. Because I know you're often very busy. You have a lot of client work. You got a lot of these articles. You're writing your book. So how do you maintain it? Like, how do you get through every day? Manage it? Is it just kind of you just go, all right, I'm feeling good right now. I'll work. All right, I need a rest now, and just kind of listen to your body.
It is a lot of listening to your body, yeah. I actually started my own business because I found that the standard workplace just wasn't really working for me. Like, you know, having to go into an office, for example, is something that is really difficult for a lot of disabled and chronically ill people because, you know, you have to get up earlier, you have to do all the prep things before you go to work, you have to sit in the commute or, you know, public transport, which can sometimes make the pain worse and can make you flare, and then you have to sit in a comfortable office chair all day and pretend that you're not in pain and work full-time set hours. And it was just really difficult. So I jumped into my own business so I could be flexible. So if I was in agonizing pain, I can just lay down, or if I'm too tired, I can just take a nap during the day, or all the other things that make it just a bit more comfortable for me to exist. It is very hard though. It's hard to say what's worse, the pain or the fatigue, because, like, at least with the pain, I can take some painkillers and I can still be a bit creative. I can write a first draft sometimes. But with the fatigue, it's like your head is underwater and you're trying to move through, like, hardening concrete, and you just can't even think and you can't even listen, and it's just the worst. You can't do anything. Unfortunately, even though, you know, in those moments I want to push myself and do things, and it's so frustrating, but if you push yourself, you end up worse. So it's a lot of pacing. It's a lot of just listening to your body and, you know, accepting that, hey, I can't do what a non-disabled person can do, and that's okay. I can do lots of things that non-disabled people can't do and have, you know, still a valid perspective. And now I think a lot of my clients actually come to me because I'm disabled, which is awesome. I love it. But also means they understand too. I am pretty good at keeping my deadlines, but sometimes when it's, you know, a tight deadline or something, I've just had, you know, incredible pain or something, I say, hey, is it okay if we push this deadline out? Is there anything, you know, driving this deadline, or is an extra day okay? And most people are pretty good with that, but it does make me feel really nervous as a business owner. I feel like, you know, there's a perception that that's unprofessional, but in reality, 1 in 5 Australians are disabled, so lots of people are experiencing this. I don't think it should be unprofessional to put your health first.
Well, it'd be unprofessional to just not tell them and be late. But if you're giving them the heads up, that communication would obviously be appreciated.
Mm.
Yeah, especially if they know going in that you have a disability. So I know, because when following your journey, that you've recently discovered a sense of empowerment by using mobility aids. So I know it took you a while to embrace them, but what finally led you to decide, okay, I'm going to give these a go, and how has it changed things for you?
To be honest, I've been eyeing off mobility aids for a while, but there is so much stigma around mobility aids, especially for young people. A lot of elderly people, when I use my walking stick, stare at me like, you can't possibly need that. Or people tell me, oh, you're too young for mobility aids, but there is no age for mobility aids. I did feel a lot of imposter syndrome for a long time. I felt like, I wasn't disabled enough. I felt like other people were more disabled and they should have it. I felt like I should just push through and, maybe it is in my head and it's not, but you diminish your own experiences, unfortunately. I just found myself longing for it. And one day I went to a gallery with a friend. We'd been walking around Melbourne for a little bit, so I was absolutely in agony, even with pain relief. I just, every step just felt so painful. And finally I was like, I asked them, do you have any mobility aids? At first they're like, oh, you can just sit on the floor when you need to. And I was like, that's not accessibility.
How am I going to get up? Okay.
I know. I finally hired one and it was absolutely life-changing. Like, I cried that night how much of a difference it made that I was able to go to an event, and I was still in pain, obviously, because I always am, but it wasn't exasperated by movement. And I just had such a great time and thought, I need to do this more. I can't care what people think. And it made me realize that any level of pain, any level of fatigue, if a mobility aid will improve your life, even marginally, just use it. Don't care what anyone else thinks. Don't care what society thinks. Like, stuff that stigma, it's just ridiculous. So now I have a walking stick, which I do use most days. I used it at a social event for the first time the other day, and that was nerve-wracking. Lots and lots of questions. What do you do to yourself? And which is
standard. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also now have a wheelchair, although I want a better one because it's quite difficult to wheel. Also, I want a pink sparkly one just
because you can. Mm-hmm. And have you named your walking stick? Have you gone down that route?
I have actually. I haven't told anyone that I've named it really, but my walking stick is like black with like red and pink roses on it. And I decided to name it Rosa. Very creative, but I was thinking like roses, but also like Rosa from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, that she's badass and strong. And I was like, yeah, that makes me feel more empowered.
I like
Rosa
that.
Is my walking stick.
Yes, and it like helps you rose up in the that was bad. Cool. Show me when you get that wheelchair, the pretty sparkly one. 100%. If it helps you with getting around and enjoying life, like if you're otherwise going to be like, I don't want to leave the house today, you don't ever want to get to that point where you're like, I'm just going to be housebound because I know I'll walk to the letterbox and I'll be in pain. So what's the point? And being young, you've got your whole life ahead of you. And if, God forbid, this pain does continue for long term, you don't want to think you're trapped with no options.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, while I do have a wheelchair, it's very difficult to use said wheelchair. Many places aren't accessible, like things I didn't think of. Like, for example, I tried to go into a shoe store and I couldn't get anywhere in because it wouldn't fit a wheelchair. I trying to get into certain places, but they have a step and you can't get in. I asked one place about their accessibility and they were like, yeah, we're accessible, but we have a small step, but just let us know when you're coming and we can come help you up. I'm like,
that's awkward.
Oh, slopes is something I didn't realize. They are so difficult to wheel up. So like, if I want to use my wheelchair, if I'm alone, it has to be somewhere that's not slopey that I can push myself. And, my arms, it's tiring to push yourself all day. So like I need someone with me, and that obviously limits my independence. It's very frustrating. So it is hard to still get out, unfortunately, but it does make it a little bit better. It means I can do some social things and live life a bit more, because honestly, most of the time is spent inside. Like a lot of disabled people, it's hard to get outside, and especially in COVID, where, you know, a lot of able-bodied people are like, oh, the pandemic's over, but no, it's not.
Yeah, actually, I know, I just remember a story. I think someone who was in a wheelchair commented how in public bathrooms, the disability toilet, actually, the door isn't wide enough for, like, a wheelchair, or the door opens the wrong way or something stupid. And so even when you think these, yeah, places have been set up to be accessible, they're actually not, which is a bit concerning.
Yeah. Well, it's because they haven't had disabled people consult on them. Like, it's not difficult. Just have lived experience. Like, I was trying to use public transport the other day on a train, and, gosh, that was terrifying. There was no signage on what you were supposed to do or where you were supposed to be. And I actually, like, my wheelchair fell into the gap, which was terrifying. But now I'm in contact with transport and suggesting how they can make it better. Like, I don't think a sign is that difficult, or like having the staff members look outside the train and say, oh, there's a wheelchair person, let's get the ramp. But people just don't think about it. It's, you know, we don't talk about it. It's not represented anywhere. If you do see disability in the media, it's often inspiration porn, or it might be, you know, someone in the Paralympics. It's never just daily issues. It's like we don't matter, despite the fact that we are a huge chunk of the population. Like, millions of people have a disability, and so many of it's invisible, and a lot of people don't even realize they're disabled. Like, I didn't realize I was disabled until someone else in the disability community was like, yeah, that's disability. I'm like, huh? That was pretty life-altering realization, to be honest.
But, yeah, like, do I have to, yeah, it's a label. I feel like I have to be officially knighted with the label of having a disability or something, right?
It's like, how do you know? And then, like, if you think you are, you probably are. Like, any condition counts as a disability, like mental illness, chronic pain, chronic fatigue. Lots of people with, like, autistic people consider that disability, blindness, deafness. And there are so much, you know, it's so much of, like, a, I guess, a spectrum. So many people have little bits or, you know, dynamic disabilities, but they're all valid. They all count. And it's okay to identify as disabled. I actually found it rather empowering. I mean, it was a bit devastating at first, because then I realized how many, all the issues that disability community faces, which is pretty awful. But I found it quite empowering now, and I can use my lived experience to hopefully make a difference.
Yeah, and because you're great with words, you can communicate it for all the people who don't have the voice or don't have the means to, yeah, get it out there. So keep up the good work there.
Thanks. It means a lot when someone tells me that my work made a difference or made them feel less alone, or like someone messaged me that you're the reason I started using mobility aids, and that just warms my heart so much. Like, yes, embrace your disability, embrace mobility aids, embrace whatever you need to make life more accessible. Just love it.
Yeah, because watching the photos, and I did see the experience with the train, and I would never have thought of it. I mean, when you become like a mum, you don't have a manual. And I guess when you have the label of disability, there's also no manual. Are you just meant to know these things? It's just this whole other world, isn't it? That you just don't, you have to learn how to navigate. And I guess you'd have to plan your trips a lot more now, knowing, yes, okay, I'm going on my own. Can I actually get there fine? Do I have to save it for a day where I am feeling a bit better, you know?
It's like, what pain relief do I take? You know, I have to wear a singlet underneath so I can attach a heat pack underneath my clothes, and I have to bring that, and I have to bring this other medication, I have to bring this cream, and here's my plan B if I have to take painkillers and I can't drive. And
yeah,
just so much planning.
Full on. Well, I hope this episode is just helping people have a little bit more awareness, and that the juggle is real, but you're still doing great work. Like, you're still getting work done, which is just amazing despite it all. So definitely kudos to you. You're pushing through, not using the disability as an excuse either to go, oh, I'm just going to go on the dole, you know, because it's just all too hard. I guess, look, that's a good thing about being writers, we can do it remotely. You don't have to go into an office. You can have your own business, can have that flexibility to go have a nap when you need. But I'm still in awe when I, you know, reach out to you like, oh, I'm exhausted. And then I see all this amazing writing coming out. I'm like, I'm not even doing that much writing myself. I hand over most of it to my writers and I'm feeling, it's a little bit tired.
I don't know how I do it. Although I do want to say that it is okay if you also just can't do anything. Like lots of people are just so disabled by their conditions that they can't do anything. And that's okay. Like our value does not come from our productivity. And a lot of times I'm not productive. All of the times I can't do anything. And that's also okay. I do try hard and it's a lot of pacing and, making lists and prioritizing. And, you know, if I'm tired, I might be able to do a skeleton draft, for example, or, just other things that require, my brain to be super on. It's just ways of finding how you can work best for you.
Yeah, I love that. And so there's a few questions I always ask my guests. And the first one is, what's the best form of marketing for your business?
Honestly, the marketing and the social media thing stressed me out so much when I started this. I was like, oh gosh, what do I say? What do I do? And then I was like, you know what? I am my business. I'm just going to post what I want, which sounds simple, but it was a big mental thing for me. So I just try and be as authentic as I can. I share, my highs and I share my lows. I share my challenges. And I think that helps people really connect with you. It may not always be the most, I think some people might think it could be unprofessional from a business sense, but in the end, we're all people and people connect to people. And also I kind of feel like my marketing is more advocacy than, I guess, advertising my business. I want it to make a difference. And, that's why I am so raw. That's why I do share about my pain and, the inaccessibility I encounter, because I think it's so important to help others to not feel so alone and to raise awareness that these things exist. So it's not, I don't really have a huge handle on, advertising my business, but by advertising myself, I am advertising my business. So that works for me.
Yeah, it pretty much works the same way for me too. I don't put a lot of stuff around. Occasionally I have promotional posts and have training or whatever, but a lot of the time it's just people getting to know me and the real me. And I haven't, at the time of recording, I haven't started this yet, but I plan to do a little series of behind the scenes of Leanne, like my brain. Just I've thought of things, random things like how I take like 3 bags to the office every day because I have to have plenty of snacks and this and this. Or I have this thing with mugs, like these mugs I can use, these mugs my husband can use, guests can only use these ones. Little fun things, right? Just so people get to know me, because it's all building that know, like, trust factor. And I feel like that's more important because I know I can write. I can show them just, here's some writing samples. But if they don't really connect with me, I'm just another writer. So it'd be the same for you, right? Mm-hmm. It's about really connecting with you and what you stand for. And if they relate to that, then they want to work with you and they see your stories. They're like, I've got a story like that I want to share too. Then it works.
Yeah, I think people really like quirky. Like as a young person, I was always so afraid of being, weird or, but right now I'm like, people love weird. And if they don't, they're not my people and that's okay. Just embrace your unique self and be who you are and say what you feel. I'm quoting Dr. Seuss now. Those who matter don't mind and those who mind don't matter.
Love that. I always ask this and we kind of had this in the episode anyway, but how do you look after your health and wellness? So on a typical day, I guess, what would you kind of know you have to get done to help you get through the day?
I take vitamins or else I am just an absolute wreck. So it's taking my vitamins, it's taking my medication, it's making sure that I drink water and eat vegetables, which sounds simple, but these things are also huge extra things on top of, managing your symptoms, managing the medical admin, going to all the appointments. Then you've got like the business stuff and then you've still got like groceries and bill paying and then cooking. So it's often really hard for me to actually look after myself. So I have to find ways, little healthy snacks or bulk cooking something. And I do try and do, little exercises and stretches if I can. It's not too bad. you know, I try and look after my body, like, you know, wash my face, brush my hair. I guess the things that tend to be the first to go when you are stressed, I guess self-care is a big part of looking after me. And when, you know, I'm sad and my mental illness gets the better of me, I guess just, you know, just look after yourself. That's all I try and do. I try to go for walks when I can, but it is often difficult, you know, with pain. I often can't go for walks alone. I also get really anxious, so I just want someone else to walk with me. But, you know, I need someone that I can take pain relief if it gets too bad and if I start flaring. It's difficult to look after my health. A lot of it, I guess, is trying to manage my pain and my symptoms, like things like hot baths or heat packs and just rest as well. Rest, I think, is the most important thing, and taking breaks, and that it's actually really productive to rest.
And how are you with sleeping? Can you have a good night's sleep, or is there no such thing for you?
No, I have always had trouble sleeping. I'm always so tired, but I can never sleep. I've tried, again, like everything. I've tried like guided meditation, all the sprays, all the pills, all the teas. The only thing that works is the actual sleeping pills from the doctors, but obviously I don't want to take them regularly. So I only take them when I, you know, okay, cool, I can have a sleep in tomorrow. This, I don't have to get up at the crack of dawn or something. Not that I ever really get up at the crack of dawn. Not a morning person, but yeah.
Fantastic. And how can people connect with you?
I have a website, so www.zoesimmons.com.au. I'm also on Twitter, at It Begins With Z. I'm on Facebook, Zoe Simmons Journalist. I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram at Something Beginning With Z. But basically, if you Google Zoe Simmons Journalist, I should come up. I've been working my SEO, so hopefully they come up. There is also a 16-year-old gymnast called Zoe Simmons, so she may also come up if you Google, but journalist usually works.
Awesome. And I'll put in the show notes as well so everyone can connect with you that way. But, yes, thank you so much. It's a great conversation. I hope if we've just at least one person, I'm sure it'll be many more than that, have learned something about dealing with chronic illness and disability, then we've definitely made it a bit more of a difference that I know is one of your core goals in life. So thank you so much for today.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope people learned something, and if anyone wants to reach out, I am more than happy to chat.
Thank you so much, Zoe. And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. You can find show notes for the episode at marketingandme.com.au. If you enjoyed listening, please subscribe and leave me a rating or review via your podcast platform of choice, and grab a screenshot of this episode and share it across your socials to get the message out there. If you're interested in connecting with me, feel free to reach out via LinkedIn to search for Leanne Shelton and let me know you're a fan of the show. You can also find me on Instagram under LeanneShelton247 or book in a free 15-minute chat. Because I'd absolutely love to chat about how I can help you grow a thriving health and wellness business. Until next time, I wish you good health and good wealth.